What's this bit for?
I'm not sure. It just cuts out the nonsense when we're talking, innit?
But not, well, it doesn't actually cut the rubbish out that we chat, no?
No, definitely not any rubbish. No. Have you actually said anything sensible?
With this in front of me?
Correct, yes.
I don't know, probably not. Well, anyway.
All right, shall we crack into it, Scott?
Yeah, I saw we...
Are we on live?
Yeah,
you put, all right, here we go.
This is what it is. We can cut this bit out and start anyway. Yeah, a couple of people listening to it.
You told me 100 people listened to it.
Apparently so.
Where were they from? Do you know?
Some random places. Obviously, Tunisia was on there. That's my brother and his wife. So,
shout out to you.
Someone in New Zealand.
Someone in New Zealand?
Yeah.
I reckon that'd be my main man, Mike Bradley. He's my man on the ground there. Cracking lad, love to get him over. He was a fabulous nine. Played for Waikato. Actually, went and played a little bit of pro rugby in Ireland.
Ooh, very good. Worth a shout. Mike, come on the pod, big man.
He's our man.
Mind you, they probably don't want to leave New Zealand at the moment because the restrictions seem pretty strict, isn't it?
Yeah, they locked it down over the weekend, so the Kiwis were getting a little bit grumpy. I said, they don't know what COVID is, do they? Yeah, exactly that.
Oh, goodness, a tough weekend in the house, is it? Oh, my God,
yeah.
For goodness sake. Right, a lot to get on through. Where do you want to kick off?
I want to kick off with last week, Scott.
Yeah.
Where we actually came off air, and we talked about this things that irritate me. And one of them is when rugby players wear their socks down. Have you ever worn your socks down, or do you keep them up with pride? Come on.
It depends what position I'm playing.
You what?
So if I'm a fly half, numero Ds, I'll have them up. Okay, but if I am at nine, I do pull them down.
Is there a reason for it? Is it just a superstitious thing? Is it just a superstitious?
I have no idea. I completely put me on the spot. It's like, there's a bloke who used to play for Wales, Gavin Ensign. And he used to dig into his fake tan and stuff. And apparently he actually used to wash with bottled water. And when anybody asked him why he did it, he was like, look good, play good, mate.
Well, he was a good player. I'll give you that.
I think he's still playing a bit of rugby league, mate.
Socks down is annoying. There was a Welsh halfback as well that played. There's a few halfbacks that keep their socks down. But no, I think... Wear your socks up. Shows a bit of pride. Were you allowed to wear your socks? You're at a uniform school.
Oh yeah, we had to wear socks up, obviously.
Yeah.
With our blazers after the match, you know, when we were going for tea. What? Mate, we used to have to, when I was in the school cricket team, first 11, 2006, 2007, whatever. I was a fielder.
A fielder.
Yeah, I think the highest I ever batted was nine or something.
And now you're opening for Luxembourg.
Well, you know, don't tell Graham Cope that. Unless he knows it better. But yeah, we used to have to go in for tea. We used to stick clean whites on and your school blazer to go in for tea.
No, I wasn't into cricket. It took too much out of my weekend, I must admit. But apart from the backyard cricket we talked about last week. But
a bit more physical, the New Zealand backyard cricket, I'd say, was it?
Oh, it comes steaming in from the boundary. You'd actually start over at Mrs. Emerson's house, number 12 on Wright Street, and you come storming in through the gates. And the brothers are a bit bigger than me, but geez, they could whistle it down, I can tell you. A little bit of tape on the tennis ball. Throw a few short ones in there, head goes turning.
Hit your brother in the head. Tell mum it was an accident, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, the socks down, you know, guilty of that.
Do you find people want to give you a little bit of a one-two, a little bit more of a clobber when you got your socks down?
I don't know, but the last time I played nine for RCL would have been, well, it was a couple of years ago, and I was playing nine that day. We were playing four time. It was the one where we won to stay up.
Yeah, that was a cracking game. I was there for that game. That's right, I asked you after the game, not sure if you remember, because it was at a moment...
I don't remember, because I had that big Polynesian tent.
That's right.
he sat me down.
They had a few Polynesians in that side. Yeah. I even think I afterwards, I'd had a few had had a few beers in me. I tried talking to him. He's from Wellington or Wainuiomata, I think. And I tried talking to him, see if we could nab him for next season.
You're
but
a bit of recruitment, that's what I like about you.
Just from the sidelines, you know.
Yeah, you know.
You know some of the stories on the sidelines back in the day in RCL.
Hit me. I've heard some good ones.
Dave Moody bringing out a 9-iron. In fact, to correct me, I've got to correct that. It's actually a 5-iron. Yeah, there's a bit of rivalry with Longwy. Yeah, the good old days. The good old days.
Well, yep. Just before we get into this, I'll tell you a funny story. There's a club in England called Red Roof, down in Cornwall. So if you look at a map of the UK, sort of like the bottom left hand corner.
That little knob like, down there. Yep.
Where, you know, it's big for the surfing and stuff. So it's near, you know, nearly down to sort of down where Penzance is. You know, that's proper. Looks out onto the Atlantic. Anyway, this. Back in the day when it was amateur, it used to be a really, really hard place to let alone, you know, to play, let alone win. You used to go down here and they had a corner of the pitch where the advertising boards got really close to the pitch. And they called it Hellfire Corner, which was actually the nickname that was given to Dover during the Second World War, because obviously the Germans could come over the channel. You know what I mean?
Right.
You hear stories about, you know, you'd be going walking over for the line out and they'll be launching beers at you, chucking burgers at you. And these are like a big, you know, Red Roof, big rugby club. They still get big crowds down there. County rugby's massive in Cornwall. You know, they'll get a couple of thousand down and they're always there or thereabouts for the county championship.
Well, that's Exeter country, isn't it?
And so Exeter's sort of, people are telling you that Exeter isn't proper Cornwall, you know, but you go way past that and way further down. Sort of the, you know, the motorway finishes at Exeter and then you go another three or four hours and that's where you're talking. Anyway, we start off with the rugby.
There's plenty of it this weekend. Yeah. Super Rugby Aotearoa kicked off, didn't they?
Yeah.
Down there we had, the first game was from the south. Crusaders played Highlanders. Cody Taylor, the All Black Hawker.
Serious line for that try, wasn't it?
Wow. When you're watching now as your Six Nations and you're watching Super Rugby Aotearoa, there seems to be a lot more speed in New Zealand than there is here. But we know that players like Johnny May, the Welsh bloke who actually gets Johnny Rhys Hammond, these guys have got wheels as well. But it's just like you're watching two different games. It seems a lot slower here. But if you put people in 100 or players in 100 meter race, that they'll be tit for tat. There's not many difference. Is it because of the tracks are different?
No, I think it's more to do with there's a big emphasis on the attack there and under, but also it's a lot of it's ruck speed. Like if you want to, you can get into so much detail about so much going on in rugby and stuff. But the ability that the speed you can recycle the ball, if you can do it quickly, it doesn't matter if you're the best defensive team in the world, you just can't set quick enough. And you look at, that's one of the things, and they have halfbacks as well in down under, they're looking to break these boys, pass the ball, move the ball, you know.
Yeah. It's quick and it's entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
Very entertaining to watch. Obviously, I will be biased, but I enjoyed it. I didn't watch all the games this weekend. I only saw the highlights. Obviously, Cody Taylor was a standout player. But basically, I've had a gutful of Crusaders winning machine. They've been doing it for too long, and I'm a Wellington man, but I've got a soft spot for the Highlanders because. I went down to Otago, and I've got family in Southland, so I've got a soft spot for them, so I want those guys to get up. Tony Brown, I think, is a fabulous coach, brilliant communicator. So they're the boys that I'm going to be rooting for this year's.
Well, fair enough. You know, they seem to have, obviously, with the restrictions, they seem to be on top of it, and life seems to be ticking over down there, so fair play to the government out there. They've obviously, they're doing something right. Obviously, the beauty of being an island.
Yeah.
Bit of a problem for us because we're landlocked.
We are landlocked. Yeah, I mean, a huge geographical border, isn't it? So, but, you can protect yourself.
Obviously, France Scotland was cancelled due to the COVID.
Did they have too many players with COVID?
Yeah, a serious number. But the funny thing is, after they beat Ireland, there's a video went out and they were going mad in the changing room. Like, there's no social distancing going on.
Well, of course they're not. They've just played rugby together, so why are they going
to... Yeah, but you could, you know, maybe don't stick that on social media. You know, if you're trying to reinforce these restrictions.
Sure. Did you see Wales on the weekend with their deer jumping around afterwards? They were happy boys, and rightly so. They got the triple crown.
Yeah. I actually saw a really funny tweet from someone called Bradley Pivak, who is obviously Wayne Pivak's son. And it says, a couple of missed calls from Wayne. I think I may have missed a good one. I want to know if he's talking about the match or if he's talking about the après, you know.
Oh, okay, yes, yes.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, 40-24, wow. Who saw that coming, honestly? Wales grew into the game. Unfortunately, I had to miss...
Did they grow into the game, or did England's penalty count? I mean, that was in that second half. It was 24-24, wasn't it? And the game was even Stevens, and they let it run away with them.
Well, I had to miss the second half because I had the little man... And the only thing he would watch was stuck Coco Melon on. Mate, the legends who invented that stuff is unbelievable.
It's good, isn't it? I have watched it, but I tell you what, I wouldn't do. I wouldn't watch it when the rugby's on.
No. But anyway,
Do you think Andy Brown watched Coco Melon equivalents when he was carrying you around, Scott?
No, of course he didn't. He probably just let me cry. No, he didn't. I don't
know. I'll ask him. I think I know the answer already.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Well, there's a few questionable calls, okay, but I'm a big believer that, you know, sometimes you've got to roll the dice. And I'll give this a shout out to Isaac Seaman, who I coached with. He's an ex South Africa Sevens player who's living out here in Luxembourg. And it's something that's sort of resonated with me. You know, sometimes just roll the dice and see what happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes it comes off, and sometimes it doesn't.
And Wales did it.
Was it a knock on from Rhys Samick? Well, the referee didn't call it, so it wasn't. So fair play, they played on, they got the try. The crossfield kick. What's the worst thing that could have happened? He goes, no, they weren't set. He still got the penalty.
Yeah.
Okay, didn't score the try off it. And then the one that I loved is when the scrum half just tapped and went.
Yeah,
it's like a rule, mate. If there's a few bodies on the ground, just get that ball, tap and go, because people can't react quick enough. There's a couple of things that are going to happen if the try isn't awarded. He'll call you back to the mark, okay? Or one of them, who's on the floor, will try and tackle you. Penalty, another 10 metres, you know? And, things came off.
It's a funny one with the referees, because sometimes, I like the tap and go, because it's advantage, isn't it? It's an advantage to the attacking team. But sometimes, or frequently, referees seem to blow it up and don't let the tap go ahead quite so often, and it varies from ref to ref. But this ref this weekend, he called one up. I mean, I did feel a bit sorry for England when you're having when you're told to have a team chat and you go and have a chat, and meanwhile he blows up and calls time on. I have an opinion about it. I felt that it was a little bit of a hard one, but. Anyway, it is what it is,
and they got back into it,
and at 24-24 it was even Stevens, and then they let it slip with a high penalty count, and it's not the first week they've played the Six Nations where their penalty count is impeding the result, or has an impact on the result.
The one I want to know is where the hell did Wales pump these scrum halves out from, mate? how good was he?
Yeah, he is.
He hasn't even started a Champions Cup game for his club yet.
Really?
Yeah, and he started for Wales there.
We talked about Dupont the other week, didn't we? And we said what a fabulous scrum half. But this boy, was he going to be in the Lions? Mind you, scrum halves have been scoring because it was a scrum. Ben Young dotted over it didn't he?
Actually, as soon as your man scored,
Ben Young's got one straight after.
He's a good player. I'll just quickly touch on the Ireland game before we get into the nitty-gritty here. Obviously, they pumped Italy, sort of expected. To be honest, for me, not much to...
Come on, Italy! You are better than this. 30 consecutive games without a loss. What's going to happen? What's going to change there? I don't know. I'm not a rugby buff. I'm not a rugby head, but...
It's a bigger picture thing, mate. It's not... You know, going in and bringing in the best coaches isn't changing it. They've got to go back to the roots. They've got to... get into the schools or get into the clubs or something, and it's got to be a 5 or 10 year project or something like that.
Bigger. I mean, how long have they been in the Six Nations for?
Just go down to New Zealand and pick up who's got an Italian grandma and
I don't think it's a numbers game, they say, isn't it? It's a numbers game, but come on, Italy. Here's a touchy one. Did you see the interview Sarah McLaughlin afterwards? How she interviewed? There's two. I think she did Owen Farrell and Eddie Jones afterwards.
Mate, it was savage. Like, you know, I thought, I'll give props to Owen Farrell. I thought he defended his wicket very, very nicely.
He did the best
in terms of not biting. You know, there's nothing worse. I can, you know, when the emotions are high, being asked questions like that. That's her job, though, you know?
Is it her job? Is it her job to ask such provocative questions? Like, her questions were just based on the referee, For me, have empathy for Owen Farrell. He's just gone out there and he's given the best he could possibly give.
Yeah.
And the questions were based on the referee. What would happen if he said something to about the referee, for example? If he just said, oh, some calls didn't go, we didn't feel they were in our favour, but...
Yeah.
Oh, mate.
It's funny because, that's tough for Farrell to take, too.
I was surprised. I was surprised with the that it's persistent. I felt that it that's her country. Would she have done that to an athlete in the Olympics? In the Olympics, British journalists seem to get in behind their country so well. You're so proud of Britain, right? I'm not British, but it's nice to watch when you have the journalists in behind the athletes as well. And at that time, I didn't feel that. The interviewer was in behind Farrell. I think that she was wanting to put both her and Eddie on a pedestal to say something about the referee. If they said something about the referee, which was probably very easy done, they get fined and potentially lose their job.
On the flip side, don't come out and say you want to be the best team in the world, because then everyone's looking to trip you up. You know, the All Blacks, they don't come out and say it, they just do it. There you go, Nike. Just on that interview, I showed you a video before we came on here, and I'll just explain this. If you want to see the complete opposite of a rugby interview after a game after that, go onto YouTube and type in Simon Shaw Lions interview, and I'll just explain the background to this story. So Simon Shaw is a monster of a man. He played second row for England and for the Lions, obviously. Now, he toured in 1997 with the Lions. So that's the legendary documentary, you know, Living with the Lions and all the raw footage, VHS, you know.
Right.
He went on that tour and he was only a young pup. So he played in all the midweek, didn't play in the tests, right? 2001, he didn't go. 2005, he went again, okay? 2009, he went again. He didn't get capped in 2005. 2009, he played 17 matches for the Lions on tours without actually getting
without starting.
So anyway, Lions lose the first test. They get pumped in the scrum, so they bring in a few big boys into the engine room. He starts the second test. That's his first test start. He plays that well. He gets man of the match. They lose the match, but he still gets man of the match. Right? It's unbelievable. Anyway, afterwards, this actually puts a lump in my throat thinking about this video. Afterwards, the interviewer's talking to him, saying, what's it like in the dressing room? And you're talking about that empathy towards the player. You know, you've lost a match, and it's not just an international. There's only three tests every 4 years. You know, you might not be playing well to get on the next one. You might be too old to get on the next one. So he's asking, what's it like in the changing room? There's a bit of tit for tat. And there's an amazing part at the end of the interview where the guy goes, I've seen you play games for England and Wasps in Heineken Cups, and I've never seen you play as well as you did today. How much did it mean to wear the shirt for the first time? And mate, he chokes up, and you can just visibly see. Oh,
he saw his eyes well up a little bit.
Makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. It really does.
And the very last piece we saw, Scott, what do you do?
I give him a hug at the end.
That is empathy.
Yeah.
A British journalist interviewing.
I'm trying to think who his name is. I don't think it's Alex Payne. dig out who it was.
A British athlete. Yeah.
If you're listening to this, go on YouTube and watch that video. And if that doesn't put a lump in your throat, you're not human. You shouldn't be listening to this podcast. so just bouncing back to the Jesus emotional roaster card.
There's a lot going on, particularly in the rugby world.
Just going back to the referee, and this is one thing I'll give credit to Jones and Farrell. It doesn't matter what you think. It matters what you say. And I'll tell you, that's two completely different things, isn't it? We talk about how rugby is different to every sport because it's built on these values of respect. I'll tell you this quick funny story. I'm rambling on here. One of my mentors, when I was training to be a teacher, he told me this story about an ex-Welsh international who was a teacher, and he was playing against another teacher. They were coaching two teams against each other. Now, if you're playing away, normally the home member of staff would referee the match, and it's not biased. It's not. When I'm doing it, I'm super harsh against
my team,
as you would expect. Anyway, so these two teams are playing, and this guy is desperate to beat this ex-Welsh international to the extent that he is so biased during the game, and they play 8 minutes of stoppage time, right, after the match. They score to tie the game. The lad has a conversion from the touchline to win the game. Takes the kick. It misses. The guy still awards the kick. They lose the game. I think it was a cup competition. Or something, so they got knocked out of the cup. Well, you can imagine the fireworks
there.
And parents and players afterwards. Wait there. You can imagine the fireworks afterwards. And then after it all simmers down, a load of the parents go up to the ex-Welsh international and say, why didn't you, why didn't you do something? And he just turned around and said, what will I do? What example would I be setting?
Would you be sitting?
To my players, if I turn around and behaved in that sort of way towards the referee, irrespective of whether I think he's right or wrong, what do you think kids remember more from that day? Getting knocked out in some cold, muddy day against some rubbish referee, or how their member of staff has ultimately like that stood up for the values that we talk about in rugby, irrespective of the result,
I mean, there's many sports with referees, isn't there, where let's say a referee makes a bad decision. Of course a referee's going to make a... It's a subjective... You've seen squash, Scott, and squash is an interesting sport. I'm coming onto the sport that I play and teach. Because you share the same space as your opponent. So you've got to work with your opponent a little bit. You've got to create space so that you've got to try to attack and defend the same area. So consequently, you're going to be interference, and you get a lot of, let's say, dubious calls. Could the player, is it a lat or is it a stroke? And you get lots of calls that are absolutely spot on, but you also get some that are terrible decisions. But what can you do about it? You're putting yourself in a game that's that subject. You cannot, you can talk to the referee for as long as a lot, but you're not going to influence the referee in any way because that's the way they saw it. So just play on despite the call. If you get a bad call, go on.
You're going to moan to me, and I'm going to turn around and be like, you know what, Nathan?
You're right.
I'm going to change the call for you.
Next time, can you moan a little bit harder, please?
Yeah, exactly.
You get... Roll with it. Roll with the dice, as you say.
Exactly. I'll just do a quick one on the basketball. Obviously, we've been shouting out to the ladies in Wilfred Ange. They pumped Sparta 93-29, so not a close one this week. But
so did Amanda and Sam, you said they played?
They both played. They both racked up some points, which is good to see. But Sparta was one of the teams that came out last week and said they weren't going to finish the season without pros. So...
So they might want to get those pros back in then.
Exactly. But I don't want to be too negative towards Sparta down in Bertrand. I am told they have a very, very strong youth section down there. So they're obviously doing something right. So shout out to all those coaches down there.
They'll bounce back.
Oh, I hit something too quickly there. Sorry.
Lovely weekend with the weather. Did you get out and about, Scott?
No.
You didn't?
Oh, I was out on the bike with the little man. That was quite funny. But that was basically the extent of my weekend. I hear your weekend was good fun. Bit of golf, was it?
Well, I went and played some golf yesterday afternoon. I did only to the driving range. I couldn't get onto the course. I didn't have enough time. But I just went down and hit some balls. Met up with Douglas McLean, the pro down there. He's in good form. I haven't seen Dougie throughout the winter because I'm only a fair weather golfer.
Dougie.
Yeah, it was nice to be out there. It's interesting. I could probably tell you a little bit about golf, actually, and what happens in
Jump in. I want to ask one question.
Go for
about
it.
Golf.
Yeah.
Steve Williams.
Yes.
Tiger Woods' caddy.
Yeah.
Is it true that he was the highest paid sports person in New Zealand at one stage?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Steve Williams was a class. Steve Williams was a class golfer himself.
Yeah. Who's he with now? The Aussie Jason Day, I think, now, isn't he?
Scott. Can't remember his name, but he was with him for a bit. But he actually in stock cards. But he fell out there for a bit with Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tiger Woods, had a unfortunate car accident this week, and ended up in he's still in hospital with a couple of broken legs. They paid quite a nice tribute to him on the weekend. I mean, he's not dead, he's alive, but they played a nice tribute where Rory McIlroy and a few others, Reed, were wearing their red and blacks. I thought that was nice, because obviously he's a rival on the course.
Yeah.
But they're all good, well, not all of them, I don't think, but they're good mates off the course as well. So I found that touching. Did you know that the first golf course to open in Luxembourg was in the mid-1930s. Grand Dakar, across from the airport. Always been a bit of a prestigious club. I guess that's the polite way of saying not that anyone can join. But then in the 1990s, additional courses were constructed in around Luxembourg. But a lot of the blokes used to talk about it, and they used to go and play over in over in Amnéville, across the border.
Yeah.
Back in those days, it was only a 20-minute car journey. But obviously, the police got hold of that, and now it takes a little bit longer. and sometime in about the early 1990s, and I don't from the walls of the Black Stuff pub, the first true golf society was formed, called the Golfaholics. There's a few little golf societies in Luxembourg.
Johnny Fitz,
that's right. They play for golf. Well, Black Stuff. That's where that's their their local horn. That's where Golfaholics. It was obviously an English speaking outfit, mostly Irish and Scots who obviously worked at Cargillux. But not to be outdone, because there's another pub around the corner called the Britannia. If you're familiar with the Britannia,
I haven't frequented it. Yeah, that's not my scene. Mate.
Which is quite clearly with Scott. It's a rugby background. So they sprang into action a few years later and set up the Frogs, the Friendly Round of Golf Society.
I've seen IPT a couple of guys who wear this, that sort of, that rings a bell now.
Did you?
Fleeces who wear a fleece with the frogs on. I was always wondering what that was.
Yeah, Frogs, Friendly Round of Golf Society. These two societies go back to different groups of people who are not the best friends, let's say that. But over the past, let's say, 30 years, mutual friendships exist. And they have an annual golf event called the Ryder Cup. They call it the Ryder Cup. It's just an annual event that they play. It's called the Ryder Cup. But it's, it was always dominated by Golfaholics. To be fair, they did have the better players. But but Frogs, they currently hold it. I mean, that was a thanks to a million and one shot that last year, played by Simon Baker, who hit the ball in the hole from 120 metres. I mean, I don't know if you know Simon Baker. He's better known for his average cricketing abilities rather than his average golfing disabilities. But he's involved with cricket, and I think your guys, you train, are involved with cricket. He's in the Frogs. You're not talking about who do you train? Richard Neal.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the one who's always he's always in his trousers. Do you not get him hot enough? I mean,
mate, you're not supposed to say this. Yeah, Neilas, if you're listening, you've got to wear shorts to the gym, mate. Can't be running around in trackies, bud. Him and Eustee will get on to it.
Yeah. I'm going to see if he wears shorts on the golf course.
So how many, these golf societies, they're like teams, aren't they?
A bunch of teams? No, they're just a bunch of people that play golf weekly.
At different golf clubs,
and they play their own little competition internally. They go to a club like Cannock, for example, and they block off an hour of tee off times and play and meet back in the bar and talk about golf, which is what these guys love to do.
A few more of these golf societies.
Do you want to test me on it? Because there's a few. They've got some funny names like Frogs.
Claws. What does Claws stand for?
It had to be female, wouldn't it? Claws.
Cargo
Lux Ladies. After Work Society.
Ah, Golf Noirs.
Nailed it.
We've got a couple others here. What else we got? The Italian Golf Society.
Did that stand for the Italian Golf Society?
Use your imagination there, bud. The Birdie Hunters.
Nice word. That's a Luxembourgish group, that lot, isn't it?
The Smegs.
Well, Saturday, Sunday morning, early golf society. It's kind of appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah, that's appropriate. Running down on a Saturday morning shouting Smegs. And then CGLL, Corporate Golf League of Luxembourg.
I mean, obviously, those guys will be the best dressed golf society, wouldn't it? If you're going to play for the Gin Cup.
If you could play any golf course in the world, what would it be?
Yeah, Augusta. I mean, that's the cream of the cream. Pebbles Beach is nice.
I'd play at Waterbury.
Waterbury?
Waterbury, mate.
Is there a tea in Waterbury?
Waterbury. It's in America, and it's where Happy Gilmore won his first golf tournament. And that's where he meets Shooter McGavin for the first time. Did you see the, because it was the 25th anniversary of the release of that film. So there's a video of Sandler on the golf course, and it's basically like, let's see if he's still got it, and he does the run up, you know, and then smashes the ball and then posts it, and then the guy who Shoot McGavin posts a video back to him of him putting in the living room. They're absolutely brilliant, two legends. Like, talk about one movie making lasting for so long. Oh, what a show.
I play with the Frogs.
Oh, so you're a golfer now, are you?
No, I'm not a golfer. I'm certainly not a golfer. I mean, these guys are pretty... Frogs and golfers. They do love their golf. It's they tell stories like fishing. I tell you the reason why I play...
I just got involved with the luck stuff. That's when Marty Davis, legend, was involved. He was top dog at the FLR. And we were playing this tournament up in... do they say Earth? It's like with the U, with the two, is it the umlauts above it? So you say like Earth. It's a 2-day tournament. Yeah. Anyway, so we played the first day with 10 players, and then these two legends have rocked up. Francois Simon, I'll tell you some stories about that bloke, mate. We'll save them for another day. And then Eduardo. Now, I'd never met Eduardo, but instantly connected with this guy, Energy. I mean, I think I'm an energetic bloke, but he's up there. So I got to know him, a few emails, messages, and then we go out and play this tournament. And he would, like, almost for badness, he'll pretend that it's almost ignorance about not knowing the rules and stuff. And so there was one day when we were playing a match in sevens, and he's at the front of the lineup, and Marty, you know what Marty's like in the touchline, going mental. Go forward, no, Edo, go back, oh, for God's sake, go back. Edo's like, what is going on here? And then I obviously, you never let the truth get in the way of a good story, do you? Yeah. So I basically made up this story that Edo obviously did. He not speak the good English, huh? And he said, hey, Scott, I stand in a line out, he push and he pull, and I say, this is not how a scrum work, you know. So I was like the guy who owns a restaurant, Lady of the Tramp or something like that. But honestly, if you know who Eduardo Angioni is,
No, good guy. The thing I like about Edo is that you don't see him for a while. It's almost like he goes walkabout. But I tell you why he's a true mate, is because you just walk straight back into the same conversation you left off like a year ago. I don't think I've seen him. I saw him 2 weeks ago. He came down and played some squash. He does some good work with some of the youth down here, some of the troubled youth. I tell you what, and even in his own time, he still goes and works. He's not like, oh, I'm working with these kids. He just goes off, and I try and help him out as much as I can. He comes and plays squash. Lovely, lovely guy. I do anything for him. But he, good friend, Edo. Good friend. I like the guy.
Yeah, he's a legend. I'll tell you some more funny stories about him another day. But we don't want to ruin it.
What else has been going on in the world of sport? There was of course I touched on sailing last week, didn't I? Well, the last 2 weeks. Have you seen these boats, Scott? Go onto YouTube, look at these boats. These guys are flying. This is like Formula One on water. I mean, as I think I said two weeks ago, the engineering behind these boats is it's absolutely phenomenal. It's like a plane.
Yeah.
Like a plane on water. But anyway, the America's Cup, they have a race, two or three teams compete in the Parada Cup, and the winner of the Parada Cup will face Team New Zealand in the final. So there was Ben Ainslie, who's won a few Olympic golds for the UK in the Olympics, and he is racing with Team Ineos against Luna Rossa. And Luna Rossa got the better of them in the series. To be fair, it was a bit one-sided.
Yeah.
Luna Rossa's had a better concept. They prepared them, you know, they developed a faster package across the wind range. And then they stepped up the performance on the water to match Jimmy Spithill, who's the captain of the boat, the top chief, let's say. He's class. And I think, Ben's come across some fierce competition in his time, but to match it with these boys, it's another step up. I think Ineos designed a boat that was just too aggressive, and that means that when the wind is blowing fast, then this boat will go faster than Luna Rossa.
Yeah.
But it's not always blowing. It's not always blowing that fast, and I think that consequently cost them. What Ben said during the week was just interesting from a perspective of sport, you know, and we've all been there. When you're in a campaign for a tournament or for an event, it depends on how long your campaign, but these guys are on a 4-year campaign for this boat race. So he basically woke up at 5 a.m. and he's like, okay, we're still in the thick of this. We're still going out there. We'll, you know, basically almost like nearly got his clothes on. And then it hit him again that he was out of the running, out of the America's Cup. You know, 4 years, and then you're out. I mean, losing takes a long time to process, but that's sport, right? I mean, do you think professionals hurt more than amateurs when it comes to a sporting loss? Because, I mean, even as kids, I mean, you see kids behaving and throwing their rackets out, and do you think professionals hurt more than...
Do professionals
hurt more than amateurs when losing?
I would say it's quite the opposite, because at least if it goes badly at the weekend, you know, if let's say you're on a Saturday,
yeah,
you linger on it on a Sunday, you're back at it on Monday morning.
But Ben Ainslie in this case, he's not.
Yeah, but I mean, they're going to go back and they're going to use their performance analysis and try and come up with ways of what they can do differently, and that's sort of part of it. Whereas you look at us, I used to joke around with another friend of mine, Max Dozan, who's actually recently retired from the national team, and we used to say playing with the national team is like a love-hate relationship, because you love it, like going away for the weekends with the boys, having a good match, you know, like Sweden, Reece, you know what I'm talking about, you know, is an amazing experience. But then you fly back Sunday night and it's back to reality, back in the office. And you're sort of like, I wouldn't say it's depression, but you do sit there and you're like, ugh. And you know, some of these boys, like there's another guy, Gauthier Barrez, you know, my French accent there, that was pretty good, wasn't it? He's from Bordeaux, so I only see him once every 6 months.
Yep.
But you make the most of the time you spend together. and then you don't see these guys again. So yeah, it's all positive. It's just different. So, yeah. Like, speaking of different, it's like, Lux, if you could change anything with the sport in Luxembourg that you think would better it, what would you do?
I would at school at a school level.
Oh, well, that's what I was gonna hope you were gonna say.
At school level, we've got to get, and I go back, I used this phrase before today, it's more numbers.
Yeah.
And I think we said last, we talked the other week about skipping. You know, just the fundamentals, get kids involved in sport through school. I get more specific, and particularly at primary school, get more sport teachers involved and put it as I wouldn't say every day, but at minimum 3 times
a week.
We definitely did. Cornwall Street School. Go back to my mate talking earlier, Mike Bradley. We actually had at playtime, which was between 2 o'clock and 3 times. So you got 3 breaks, right? You got 10 o'clock break. Lunchtime. Then you got, and then you got your lunchtime, which is your hour, and then you got this one between. We finished school at 3 o'clock. So, but 3 o'clock. So between 1 and 2, there was this hour break. Mate, I don't know about at our school, and I'm sure our school is no different. That was basically fight time.
Yeah, we would bulldog. You must have seen
bulldog. Yep. I can talk about other stories. Joey Waru, the master of disaster. We called it bull rush. You called it bulldog. We called it bull rush. Yeah, where does bulldog come from? Bull rush comes from rushing bulls coming out.
The UK probably invented it, so we probably get dips on the name. You know.
We'd probably beat you at it though.
Yeah, too sure. Yeah. But there was that's funny you said that, because I love YouTube, mate. YouTube, where that. But if you go on there, there's a video, 2005. They do the lions against the All Blacks, and it's bulldog, and it's full tilt, mate. Full noise.
Yeah, good. It's class. It's class.
Finishes up with not Dougie Howard, Joe Rococo, and Brian O'Driscoll, they're the last two, and then the advert finishes. It's a brilliant.
Yeah, it was a good piece.
Giving a shout out to Adidas here. If you want to sponsor us, send us a message.
So yeah, we had those. At that time we had 5 minute fights, and it was all about playing, and you know, and we play, and it's not. And I'm not talking about, okay, the girls weren't fighting; they were playing on the monkey bars, but. You know, it was aggressive because we were fighting, but we're doing sport the whole time,
but
and it just doesn't happen.
Back to what we were saying about we know how to be bored. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're bored, go and do something about it.
Go and do something. Yeah.
So
yeah. Anyway, we went a little bit away from the amateurs getting hurt. If I come back to that sailing again. Fair credit to this guy, because I really rate Ben Ainslie, and there's a reason why he's a sir. He's a quality bloke.
Is he a sir? Is he a knight? Has he been knighted?
Yeah. I mean, the UK, they kind of knight someone for giving a dog a bone, don't they?
Like Scotland caps, everyone's got one, eh?
That's nasty. That's nasty. But he did say, listen, fair play. They're gonna and I think they want another crack at the America's Cup. Yeah. But that's obviously depending on who's going to win this.
Funding.
Well, they've got this guy, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who funds it. Who is Mr. Ineos?
Oh, okay.
He's a Monaco-based British billionaire, chemical engineer turned financier and industrialist.
We forgot to do this bit, but obviously this is Scott Brown again.
Nathan Snaid.
Top squash, Little Lions.
Here in Luxembourg. Yeah.
Obviously, a few people have said to me, why don't you do the intro at the start? It's because we're different, eh?
Let's rip into it and put all the razzmatazz later on. We're only starting off, aren't we, Scott? We're just starting off. We're just
only getting going. But a few comments in. Please. You know, share, pass this on to people. We're discussing about potentially getting a guest on. We've got a few people lined up. Obviously, Reese is here, but he's not many.
Well, he was ringing the doorbell today, wasn't he?
Mate.
Trying to get in a bit early before his invite.
Tell you what, you want to see him make sure that door's shut as well. He bloody slammed that hard enough, didn't he? Anyway.
But I want to get James Kent on.
The James Kent,
the rig, the one and only.
The rig. He's not even in that good shape, like. Or did he think he was in good shape?
No, he was just. I don't know why. He's a big guy. He's only a centre though, isn't he? He's not that. But he was just.
Are we gonna have to? Because obviously he's an opposite. Mate, are we gonna have to sit you at opposite ends of the table, like, or how's that gonna work? Or
he's French, isn't he?
Oh,
I tell you what, he knows everything about sports analytics. He's studying at the moment. He works with but we've got to get him on. There's loads of quite a few sports personalities. I've got one for you. One big question before we sign off: what was the slowest marathon time? The slowest marathon. What do you think is the slowest? Yeah. We know fast. I think they break about 2 hours, don't they? They break 2 hours. I think that's about two. Right. I can tell you a guy. He's a Japanese guy called Seijo Kanakuri, right? Who did a marathon in 1912. It was in Stockholm, right? But he somehow fell asleep.
Whilst he was running?
Whilst he ran, he got disorientated,
yeah.
And he ended up in a local farmer's barn, and they took care of him. And anyway, he woke up a few days later, and he was embarrassed to go and say what happened. And anyway, he was ashamed. He just returned back to Japan undercover. But in 1967, he returned back by invitation. Because he was one of the Japanese. He's known as the runner. There's a nickname for him. Anyway, he got invited back, and he accomplished the marathon back then in 1967. Huh. So it became and it became they wrote down as official. So 54 years, 8 months, 6 days, 8 hours, and 32 minutes and 20 seconds is the longest marathon that's ever. Seijo Kanakuri. Well, we're back on next week again, Scott. Same time, same place. I hope...
good Japanese pronunciation there. Anyway, take it easy, mate.
Okay, bye.